the help of a brother is always welcome, he contradicted pleasantly. Especially a brother who rides the skies in his own Henshaw.
And then he went on swiftly.
And perhaps there is some small service that I could offer in return for your help.
Crafty rogue, China thought, admiring his style. He knows I haven't come here out of compassion. He knows I want something. And both of them retreated, in the African manner, behind another screen of pleasantries and trivialities, coming back only circuitously and almost flirtatiously to the main subject.
I laid a trap for Frelimo, Tipu Tip boasted. I pulled back from the Save forests.
In truth, he had been driven out of those infinitely valuable indigenous forests, only after hard fighting, in the face of the most determined Frelimo attack since the beginning of the long campaign.
That was cunning of you,
China agreed, letting the razor edge of sarcasm flash in his tone.
What a trap to leave the forests to Frelimo, and how stupid of them to fall for it.
The Save forests were a treasure house. 70-foot-tall leadwoods, which were also called ivory tusk trees for their densely fine-grained timber. Magnificent Rhodesian mahogany, which yielded logs 5 feet in diameter, and the most rare and valuable of all African trees, the tamboti, or African sandalwood, with its richly figured and scented timber. Probably nowhere on the continent was there such a concentration of these precious hardwoods. They constituted the last natural resource of this ravaged land. First, the great elephant herds had been wiped out. Then the rhinoceros and the buffalo had been machine-gunned from the air. The Soviets and the North Koreans had plundered the vast natural prawn beds and fisheries of the rich, warm Mozambique current along the eastern coast, while foreign adventurers with Frelimo licenses and approval had decimated the crocodile population of Lake Kabora Bassa. Only the forests still remained intact. Even more so than the other newly independent African states, the government of Mozambique was desperately short of foreign exchange. For over a decade, they had been fighting a drawn-out guerrilla war that had bled their economy white. Those forests were their last assets that they had to sell for hard cash.
They have moved in with labor battalions. 20, perhaps 30,000 slaves,
Tipu Tip told China.
So many?
China asked with interest.
Where did they find them? They have swept the last peasants off the land. They have raided the refugee camps, gathered the vagrants and the unemployed from the slums and streets of Maputo. They call it the Democratic People's Full Employment Program, and the men and women work from dawn to sundown for 10 Frelimo escudos a day, and the single meal they are fed costs them 15 Frelimo escudos.
Tipu Tip threw back his head and laughed, more in admiration than amusement.
Sometimes Frelimo's not so stupid, he admitted. The labor battalions pay 5 escudos a day for the privilege of cutting the government timber, a most admirable arrangement. And you have allowed Frelimo to do this?
China asked. It was not the plight of the labor battalions that concerned him. A single 60-foot log of tamboti was valued at approximately $50,000, and the forests extended for hundreds of thousands of acres.
Of course I allow them to do this,
Tipu Tip agreed.
They cannot move the timber out until the roads and the railway are reconstructed, and only then they are piling the logs in dumps along the old line of rail. My scouts count each log that is added to the stockpile.
Tipu Tip took a grubby plastic-covered notebook from the pocket of his kudu skin gilet and showed China the figures that he had neatly noted down in blue ballpoint pen on the back page. China kept his face impassive as he read the total, but his eyes glittered behind the gold-rimmed sunglasses. The sum of dollars was sufficient to finance the war chest of both armies for a further 5 years, enough to buy the Alliance of Nations or to elevate a small warlord to the estate of president over the entire nation for life.
The time is almost ready for me to return to the forests of Save and collect the harvest that Frelimo has gathered in ready for me. How would you export this harvest? A log of Tamboti weighs 100 tons. Who would buy it from you?
Tipu Tip clapped his hands and shouted to one of his aides who was squatting in the shade of the building across the street. The gorilla jumped up and hurried to where the two generals sat. He knelt to unroll a field map on the cracked concrete floor of the veranda between their stools and placed lumps of broken concrete on the corners of the map to hold it flat. Tipu Tip and China leaned forward to study it.
Here are the forests.
Tipu Tip traced out the boundaries of the vast area between the Rio Save and Limpopo rivers, directly south of their own position.
Frelimo have set up their timber yards here and here and here.
Go on, China encouraged him.
The most southerly dump is only 30 miles from the north bank of the Limpopo, 30 miles from the South African border. The South Africans have disavowed us. They have signed an accord with Chissano and Frelimo, China pointed out. Treaty and accords are merely pieces of paper,
Tipu Tip waved them aside.
Here we are discussing $500,000 worth of timber. I have already received assurances from our erstwhile allies in the South that if I can make good delivery, they will arrange transport to their border and payment in Lisbon or Zurich.
He paused.
Frelimo has cut and stacked the goods for me. It remains only for me to collect and deliver.
And my new helicopter gunships will assist your collection, China suggested.
Assist? Yes, although I cannot achieve the same results with my own forces.
Perhaps. But a joint operation would be quicker and more certain, China told him.
We share the fighting and the spoils. With my henshaw and reinforcements from the north, it would take a week or less to drive the Frelimo forces out of the forests.
Tipu Tip pretended to consider the proposition and then nodded and asked delicately.
Of course, I could reward you for your help with a modest percentage of the value of the timber we capture. Modest is not a word I greatly favour, China sighed. I prefer the good socialist word equal. Let us say an equal share.
And Tipu Tip looked pained and threw up his hands in protest.
Be reasonable, my brother.
For an hour longer they haggled and argued, slowly drawing closer to striking a bargain over the private distribution of a nation's wealth and the fate of tens of thousands of wretched individuals in the labour battalions.
My scouts tell me that the people in the logging camps are near the end of their usefulness,
Tipu Tip remarked at one point.
Frelimo have fed them on such rations that nearly all of them are sick and starving. They are dying by hundreds each day, and they are cutting half the timber that they were 2 months ago. Frelimo have run out of replacements for the logging gangs, and the whole business is running down. There is not much to be gained by waiting any longer. We should attack immediately, before the beginning of the rains.
China looked at his digital wristwatch, a badge of rank as significant as the star upon his epaulettes. The hind would be returning to pick him up within an hour. He must conclude the negotiations and strike the bargain. Within minutes, they had agreed on the last details of the combined operation, and then China mentioned casually,
"There is one other matter."
And his tone alerted Tipu Tip to the importance of the next request. He leaned forward on the stool and placed his hands, as broad and powerful as the paws of a grizzly bear, on his knees.
"I am chasing a small party of white fugitives. It seems that they are attempting to reach the South African border."
Briefly, China sketched out a description of Sean's party and ended.
I want you to alert all your forces between here and the Limpopo to be on the lookout for them.
A white man and a white woman, a young white woman. It sounds interesting, my brother,
Tipu-Tip said thoughtfully.
The man is the most important. The woman is an American and may have some value as a hostage, but otherwise she means little.
To me, a woman always has value, Tipu-Tip contradicted him, especially if she is white and young. I like a change of flesh occasionally. Let us make another bargain, my brother. Once again, equal shares. If I help you to capture these runaway whites, you may have the man, but I will keep the woman. Is it agreed?
China thought for a moment and then nodded.
Very well. You may have her, but I want the man alive and uninjured.
That is exactly how I want the woman,
Tipu-Tip chuckled.
So again we are in accord.
He stretched out his right hand and China took it. Both of them knew, as they stared into each other's eyes, that the gesture was meaningless, that their agreement would be honoured only as long as it favoured both of them, and it could be broken without warning by either of them as circumstances altered.
"Now, tell me about this young white woman," Tipu-Tip invited. "Where was she last seen, and what are you doing to catch her?"
China returned immediately to the map spread between them, and Tipu-Tip took note of the new animation in his expression and the eagerness in his voice as he explained how Sean and his party had avoided the trap he had set on the border and how the Shangani deserters had reported their position and their intention of heading southwards.
"We know their last definite position was here."
China touched a spot just north of the railway line.
"But that was 3 days ago. They could be anywhere along here."
He spread his hand and drew it down across the map.
"One of the party is badly wounded, so they have probably not reached this far south. I have patrols, almost 300 men, quartering the ground south of the railway looking for their spoor, but I want you to lay a net like this in front of them. How many men can you spare?"
Tipu-Tip shrugged.
"I have already placed 3 companies here along the Rio Save, keeping watch on the logging in the forests. There are 5 more companies spread across here, further north. If these whites are trying to reach the Limpopo border, they will have to pass right through my lines and the Frelimo guards in the forest. I will radio my company commanders to be fully alert for them."
General China's tone was sharp and authoritative.
"They must cover every trail, every river crossing. They must take out a stop line with no gaps in it, and my sweep line coming down from the north will drive them onto it. But warn your section commanders that the white man is a soldier and a good one. He commanded the Ballantine scouts at the end of the war."
"Courtney," Tipu-Tip broke in, "I remember him well."
And then he chuckled.
"Of course, it was Courtney who led the raid on your base. No small wonder that you want him so badly. You and Colonel Courtney go back many years. You have a long memory, my brother."
"Yes," China nodded and touched the lobe of his deaf ear. "Many years and a long memory. But then, revenge is a dish that tastes best if it is eaten cold."
They both looked up as the sound of the Heinz turbos whistled in from the north of the village, and China checked his wristwatch. The pilot was precisely on time for the pickup, and China felt his confidence in the young Portuguese reinforced. He stood up from the stool.
"We will maintain radio contact on 118.4 megahertz, he told Tipu-Tip. 3 schedules daily, 6 a.m., noon, and 6 in the evening.
But Tipu-Tip was not looking at him. He was looking up longingly at the shape of the hind as it hovered above the village like some mutated monster from a horror movie. General China settled himself into the flight engineer's seat and closed the armoured glass canopy. He raised his right thumb towards where Tipu-Tip stood on the veranda of the derelict Duca, and as he returned the salute, the hind rose vertically above the village and swung its nose towards the north.